Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Why by Marvin Blake is an epic story set in 1838 through 1863, chronicling the lives of two sisters, one white, the other black, both born in 1847, 3 days apart on Virginia's wealthy Rosewood Plantation. The novel examines three coexisting 19th century American cultures: the privileged world of the South's antebellum slaveholding white planter society, the oppressed communities of the black slaves, and the noble nomadic hunter-gatherer society of the Plains Indians. Marvin was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland, in its then racially segregated housing projects, graduated from Baltimore's previously all-white Southern High School, enlisted, served nearly 6 years in the U.S. Navy, a graduate of the United States Navy's Hospital Corps School, the United States Navy School of Medical Technology, Long Island University, C.W. Post College, and the New School University. His professional career spent as a senior hospital administrator in several of New York City and Nassau County's prestigious teaching medical centers. Marvin retired from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs at the end of October 2012. Marvin Blake, author of the critically acclaimed historical fiction Why, a gripping and potent tale of choice, racism, and equality, is our guest on This Week in America. Marvin, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
You have done such an excellent job with the book and telling this story. I didn't want to give away too much in the beginning. Tell us a little bit about the story, the people that haven't read it, what the story is, and then we'll get into detail. But give us sort of an overview of your story, Why.
Okay. First off, a disclaimer.
Yes.
I am not a historian. You pointed out very, very succinctly my background in terms of academic and also professional. However, I am a devotee, a fan of history. It's my hobby. I like history. So what I decided to do, what I had been talking about maybe about a decade before I retired, from the Veterans Administration, I had been talking about to my wife, who has since passed away, while a question that has just been bugging me for the entirety of my life, and it's associated with my life's experiences. Okay, now I know this isn't about the book, but it is about the book in a way.
Yes.
And that question is just one word. It's why? Why all this racial prejudice in the world from when I was a kid, a child, an adolescent, a young adult, a successful professional? And I just, the same question, it would happen to me in all life experiences. So when I retired, my wife said to me, she basically said to me, you're underfoot. Why don't you get out of the house here? Why don't you write that book that you've been talking about all this time?
That hobby of writing. Why don't you get a computer and start writing your story and stay out of my way? I can understand that. Yes, I love that.
Yeah, so anyway, I took her at a word. And I went to the local libraries. I was living in New York at that time on Long Island, in Freeport. And we had a network of libraries that were really very helpful to me. I remember when I was doing the research for Why, my niece said to me, Uncle Marvin, where are you going? Every day you retired and you're never home until about 4 o'clock. And I said, I go to the library. I'm writing this novel. She said, I know you're writing a novel, but why are you going to the library? You're writing a novel. And I said, well, I it's a historical fiction, and I want to make sure, absolutely sure, that the tale that I tell is, as far as the setting is concerned, is historically correct and accurate. And she said, she looked at me, and by the way, I'm sorry, it wasn't her. It was my nephew, and he was about 10 at the time.
Okay.
And he looked at me, and he said, well, research? I said, yeah, I go down to the Freeport Memorial Library, to the Baldwin Memorial Library, et cetera, et cetera. And I work with the librarians. And he said to me, he said, well, why don't you just Google it?
Interesting. 10 years old, the way they think.
Why don't you just Google it? Oh, man. I said, no, that's not the way I want to write this book. I want to see more than what's in Wikipedia. I really would like to be able to look at some papers and look at some other documentation about the era. Okay. So anyway, getting back to your original question, Rick, I know I digressed.
That's all background, though. I appreciate the background of the story that gives us an understanding what you were trying to do in the mindset at the time.
Yeah, well, it's what I did was why I wanted to educate while entertaining. I had always thought during my life, as far as school was concerned, you get assignments to read this book or to read that book, and you do it because you want a good grade. But I really wanted to be able to communicate to an audience that would have a good fictional novel centered around actual historical events. So, I didn't mention to the audience, and this is kind of, I have to identify, I'm a Black American, Afro-American. I was born in 1942, and at that time I was being called, or my people were being called coloreds. And then I recall 1950s when I started school. Well, I didn't start a school, but I was in elementary school. And then they called us Negroes. And in the 60s, there was another term for African-Americans, and now that term became Blacks. And by the way, that's my favorite. As I go through this whole litany. And in the 70s, the term evolved again, and now it was Afro-Americans. That's fine, okay. But one of the reasons that I prefer my identity to be that of being Black is because there are a lot of African-Americans, which incidentally, I had a colleague, he was from Egypt, and this is a quick aside, I wasn't going to even say this at all, but we were talking about race relations at one point, and he looked at me, and I was talking about how the African-Americans or Afro-Americans were being treated this, that, and the other. He looked at me, and he said, listen, I'm the only African-American here. I'm naturalized, and I actually was born in Africa.
Interesting. Interesting perspective, yes. Yes.
Hey, it's a good point. I think I'll go back to
that. Marvin Blake is our guest on the program. He's the author of the book, Why. The book deals in history, romance, suspense. It's an entertaining story and a very important story of a period in American history, 1838 through 1863. Book available at Amazon. Marvin's got a couple of websites. I'll give you those as we go through the program. And it's interesting, when you wrote this, besides the entertaining story, you mentioned the fact that you really wanted to leave us with something when it's over, to get us thinking. Give us a little bit of your thought process. Should we change the way that we think about people after reading this book?
I that would be wonderful.
Yes.
But really what I want to, the point that I really want to get across, and I really, really, really want to get this one point across, whether or not you like the story that I wove this around. What I really want to get across is the fact that prejudice is nonsense. It just absolutely makes no sense. It's artificial and it's man-made. It's not innate. Prejudice is not innate. As a matter of fact, when you, and many people who have read Why, the book, they haven't read the title page where it says, if you'll bear with me for a minute, says freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. That's Martin Luther King. The little quote above that, by the way, comes from a slave owner. How about that? Shows you that I'm an equal opportunity author.
Yes.
It says, the whole commerce between master and slave is a perpetual exercise of the most boisterous passions, the most unremitting despotism on one part, and degrading submission on the other. Our children see this and learn to imitate it, for man is an imitative animal. This quality is the germ of education in him. From his cradle to his grave, he is what he sees. He is what he sees others do. And that was written by Thomas Jefferson, big-time slave owner.
Yes.
And I'm going to leave you with, I'll give you another one. It's a big book. This one is from Oscar Hammerstein. I'm not going to read the whole thing. The point of this one is the first line from the title. The title is you've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to hate. And the last quote there is from Chief Red Cloud. He was from the Oklahoma, the Sioux, from the Sioux Indians. Plains Indians. They made us many promises, more than I can remember, but they kept but one. They promised to take our land, and they took it. Okay, so those are what I want to get back to your point, Rick, is I really want to display how people really can really get along and how people can live together, and how people can overcome societal prejudices. Okay, so the way I did this was, I started the book, as you pointed out, in about 15-20 years before the Civil War.
Yes,
and it's on a plantation in Virginia, and this plantation is a cotton plantation. And it's owned by this couple, and it's a typical planter class couple, white couple, of course. And they, if you were to judge them in terms of what type of masters they were, I guess the best description would be that they were moderates. Okay, they were not cruel. They believed in slavery. They believed in discipline to keep slaves in line, but they were not as cruel as many were. The book starts out where I attempt to paint a picture of what life is like on this plantation with a total of about 85 slaves and actually around three white people, the master, the mistress, and their son. Now, one of the things that I point out early in the book is the fact that it's common practice at that time for the white master to have what his wife called dalliances with black female slaves. And the master, his name is Henry, the character's name is Henry Billings, has a dalliance, and it's certainly not a dalliance because it lasted for 20 years. I'm
yes.
just using his wife's description with a black slave. Her name was Ruth, and Ruth just happened to be the personal slave of the mistress, the master's wife. And to skip a little bit of the very interesting story in between, what happens is that his wife, Peggy, gives birth to a daughter. And the daughter is one of the main characters in the novel. And her name is Rebecca. And 3 days later, the master's black slave, I'll call it a concubine, for lack of a word coming to my brain at this time, gives birth to another girl, and her name is Mandy. These two are the main characters of this novel. We're going to follow them during their life at the Rosewood Plantation. Then we're going to follow them as they are forced to live in a new culture, a culture which is the Plains Indians, to be more specific, the Comanche. But getting back to the first part, there's a law in Virginia, in the whole South at that time, which prohibits the teaching of slaves. The white girl, these two girls have been literally inseparable since infancy. And the Margaret Billings, or Peggy, the plantation's mistress, she's the mother of the white girl, as I said before, and she insists that Ruth's daughter, Mandy, she insists that the black girl be the constant companion, a live-in black plaything for her daughter, Rebecca. Okay. So these kids have been together since infancy.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, they both used to nurse together they would be nursed by Ruth as she would breastfeed the kids at the same time. So they really had a really strong bond. Not only was the bond associated with kids being companions and playmates, but obviously they would be suckled by the same person. So the kids grow up together, and as they grow, their relationship is evolving as far as the parents are concerned. When they were young and toddlers, they were cute little kids. They're just toddling around and doing the things the kids do. And then when they grew, the relationship started to turn and to change. And Mandy's mother, Ruth, would tell Mandy, I'm paraphrasing now, I don't have the book in front of me, but the essence was that Becky's not your friend. She's your mistress. Don't you ever believe that she's just that the two of you are going to be equals? Obviously, those aren't the words that she would use, since she's illiterate. Okay, Mandy listens, but Mandy is going into one ear and out the other because the same thing is happening to Rebecca, but she's hearing a different story. She's hearing from her father, the white girl, is hearing from her father, the master of the plantation, Becky, you really got to stop hanging around, again, I'm paraphrasing, with Mandy. She's a slave. She's not like us. She's not a person. She's our property. She's a slave, and this is going too far. But Rebecca, as did Mandy, listened and it went through one ear and out the other because these two girls were really tight. Anyway, they were so tight to the point that while Rebecca was being homeschooled by her mother, Rebecca would in turn teach Mandy everything that her mother taught her. So Mandy became literally bilingual in the society. Mandy spoke like the slaves when she was with the slaves, with that heavy broken English dialect.
Yes.
And when she was with Rebecca, her English was pristine. Okay. And but when Mandy was asked a question by the mother, Rebecca's mother, the mistress, or her father, Mandy would always revert to that slave dialect. She would never, ever, would she speak to them with correct, grammatically correct English. Okay, and that was something that she did take from her mother in terms of not showing the white folk that she could that she was literate at this point. Now, as the story progresses, Mandy and Rebecca, they're, as I said before, they're inseparable, and they once witnessed together. I think they're about eight or nine, don't hold me to it, but I think that's the age.
Yes.
When they see one of the slaves, his name is Pee-wee, and he works in the stable, and he's being brought back to the plantation. This is early in the morning, and he's tied up. He has a rope, and he's walking behind these two slave catchers, these two white men, whose occupation is to catch slaves, runaway slaves, and return them to for money. Okay, so skipping to what happens is they bring Pee-wee back, and they take him to the barn, and the master goes in, and he asks Pee-wee, he said, Pee-wee, what do you got to say for yourself? Were you running? Are you a runner? And Pee-wee says, no, master, I wasn't running. I was just over at the next plantation seeing my gal. I overslept. And when I started running over here, them two men, they done caught me. And they had Pee-wee strung up in the barn when they were doing the questioning. And I say they because it was the master and the overseer. He was another of the white people on the plantation. And so the master walks away from the slave who's strung up by his arms. By the way, it's not his neck. He's dangling from his arms, rope tied around his arms. And they have thrown the rope over a cross beam, and they pull him up. And that's when he gave his explanation. So the master walks over to the overseer, Lucas, and he says, Lucas, he walks over, and Lucas says to him, Mr. Billings, what am I going to do? What do you think? And the master says to him, I believe Pee-wee. I believe him. I mean, that he's been going, he goes to town all the time. We give him a pass all the time. I don't think he's a runner. And then the overseer says to him, what are we going to do? And he said, well, he was off the place without a pass. So let's give him 15 strokes. He said, and lash it with the rope. It's got to do something. So anyway, they start to whip Pee-wee. And unbeknownst to them, peeking through the back of the barn is both Rebecca, the white girl, and Mandy. And they look, and they are traumatized. And they... Mandy starts screaming because she's never seen a person get whipped like this before.
Wow.
Because Pee-wee's groaning and moaning. And Mandy runs back to the house hollering, Mama, Mama, Mama. And Rebecca, she's shell-shocked too. She said, when they first saw Pee-wee being drawn into the stable, Mandy had asked Rebecca, what's your father going to do? And Rebecca said, oh, silly, you just give him a little scolding.
Yes,
you know, we don't whip.
Wow.
So anyway, they both they scream and they run into the house. When the master, Rebecca's father, hears the noise, he drops the whip. He hands the whip to Lucas, and he says, listen, you finish this up. I'm going to see what that's about. And he goes into the back of the barn, outside the back of the barn, and he sees Rebecca's doll. So he knows that his daughter was there. And if his daughter was there, then obviously he didn't have to really stretch his imagination. He knew that where where Rebecca was, Mandy was.
Wow.
So he knew that they both had seen this.
Yes.
And he goes back into the house, and his wife berates him. He tells his wife what happened. And she says, well, what were you doing? And he said, well, he was off the place without a pass. I had to whip him. So she said, in front of the kids? How could you do that? You listen. And he said, I had to whip him. You know, these are our property. We got to keep these. It's 85 of them to three of us.
Yes. That's.
So she recognized it. Okay. She said, oh, well, you really didn't have to. And not in front of our daughter. Well, anyway, that's one of the cogent scenes. There are so many.
To
show what was going on.
And boy, this time has gone by so quickly. I've got a couple minutes left here. That's one of the many stories. A look at the deeply disturbing aspects of slavery in the American South. This was a turbulent time there just before the Civil War, about 15 years before the Civil War. You've got these amazing characters that Marvin introduces us to, and to see how they evolve and the directions they go. There are psychological twists. There are plot turns along the way. It's an excellent story, a story that will get you thinking and wondering how far we've actually advanced, where we are in 2020. The book is Why Marvin Blake is the author. His websites are booksbymarvinblake.com and marvinblakeauthor.com. Blake is B-L-A-K-E. Marvin, a couple minutes left here. What's this experience been like for you? The being a writer. What's the best part of it for you?
Well, the best part for me is that it let me. I'm now in my seventh decade, and it was really a catharsis for me. It gave me an opportunity, and my wife recognized this at the time, to really get all of this stuff that was smoldering in me.
Yes.
And believe me, a lot of the characters in this book are based on my life's experience. I wove the fictional part around things that had actually happened to me, and I gave the characters different names, obviously. But one thing I really wanted to quickly say, if I have time, Rick,
sure.
I want to talk about the Plains Indians. Well, what happens is that Rebecca and Mandy are both captured by Comanche. Comanches make both Rebecca and Mandy their slaves. I know we're short on time. So what happens now is that Rebecca, who has been a daughter of the South, of the aristocratic class, really knows nothing about nothing. So Mandy protects her. Mandy says to her, Mandy says, listen, when I was back on the plantation and I was a slave, you taught me, and you're my sister. And this is the first time that they both acknowledge the fact that they're biologically sisters. And Mandy says, now it's my turn to teach you. So, well, I'm going to teach you how to survive as a slave. And again, and the story moves on from there with a very, very, what I think was a informative for me, because I really had to do a lot of the research on this, because I really didn't know as much about it. But the life of the Plains Indians, the Comanches, and I did. I thank the ladies at the Freeport and the Baldwin and the Rockville Center Libraries for helping me find all the material that I needed for that. But that's very interesting also. So that's before you had said that it was about the girls and three different cultures. So those are the three cultures.
And that sums it up. And for many people, this will be maybe the first time you really get a glimpse at the Plains Indians that you enter into this story. It's such a job well done. And you've seen so much in your life, just in going through the background, the racially segregated housing, the segregated schools. You've seen a lot of, I hope, change, positive change that we've been building on for decades here in the country. And the name of the book is Why, and we could ask that about so many things that in our lives that we've all experienced. It's a job well done. History, romance, suspense, it's all there. I mentioned in the beginning a tale of choice, of racism, of equality, and really fascinating characters that the people who've reviewed the book really got involved in the lives of these characters. It's history coming alive in Marvin's book. And again, the website's booksbymarvinblake.com, marvinblakeauthor.com. Of course, you'll find it at Amazon. If you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on and get information directly from Marvin's website. What, I got about 30 seconds here. What are you working on now? You've got something else you're working on?
Yeah, I actually wrote the sequel to Why. It's called E Pluribus Unum, and you'll read that on the website. And I'm now about halfway through the last in the book, is, and then it'll be the trilogy, the last chapter, as you follow these characters through their lives. And if you got 1 second, I've got, sure. I would like to make one quick association with you. And I sort of wrote this down, so I'm going to, you can tell that I wrote it down. It says, recently during the at the funeral of George Floyd, the black man who was slain in Minneapolis by police, former Vice President Joe Biden sent a video message to George's 6-year-old daughter, Gianna. And in that message, Vice President Biden said he imagined that if she could speak to her slain father, she would probably ask a question. The question that black children, that I, as a young black boy, a black teen, a black man, have been continuously asking, and that question is, why? Why? So it's very germane. That was an actual, well, the question was actually said and played on TV. That's where I got it from Joe Biden, President for the United States of America.
That's why this title is so simple yet so powerful. Why? It's a question that we need to ask in a number of circumstances in society today. Just very simply, why? That's the title of the historical fiction written by our guest on the program, Marvin Blake. The other books you'll find out about at his websites, and hopefully we can have Marvin back and talk some about those. Booksbymarvinblake.com, marvinblakeauthor.com. Book at Amazon. You'll find all of this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Marvin, the time went by quickly. Excellent conversation. A pleasure having you on the program. We will stay in touch. Thank you for being with us on the show today.
Thank you, Rick. I really enjoyed it.
It has been our pleasure. Marvin Blake, author of Why? Information on the book on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.